Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. Today we're going to be talking about housing, one of the most basic of human needs. And we have with us George Sable, Executive Director of Clatsop Community Action, and Diane Hess, who is the Education and Outreach Director with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. And George, let me start with you. Can you give us in a nutshell what it is that Clatsop Community Action does in regard to housing?
Our mission is to help people meet housing, food, and basic living needs. So what we do with housing is we help people, we advocate for people to get into affordable housing. We have some low-income housing programs, and we have some other programs that help people that are in transition or limited income for a longer term, help people that way.
And who would your client base be? Who are the people who you serve?
And we were just speaking about this before on air, and our mission is to help people that are low-income, homeless, near homeless. Low-income is a huge thing that we are talking about. In Clatsop County, we may have working families, both parents working, children going to school, and they're having a tough time making ends meet. Mm-hmm. That's low-income. So we help people like that. It's not just what Diane sees is out in Burnside in Portland. You'll see the homeless village. We have some in Clatsop County. A lot of people don't know that. We have camps, but they're not in the open. A lot of people don't see them. We try to help those people out also, but you know, the gamut goes all the way from working people, working stiffs like you and me. We're helping those kind of people out that can't make it.
So can you tell me what kinds of help it is that you're able to offer to people?
Okay, you know, we're talking about housing, Roger, but the thing is that when somebody comes in for assistance with housing, we may not be able to help them, but we say, well, we could help you with some energy assistance. Mm-hmm. We could help you pay your electric bill, for example. If you could put the money towards electric bill, you have money towards your rent. We run the regional food bank. You've had us on your program for a food program. We work with over 30, almost 40 agencies throughout the county to get food to people. So we do different programs like that. We do programs where it's one time. For example, our Project Homeless Connect. We reached out to people this past January, and we do it each year. It's the Jessica McClay Memorial, and we had 190 households show up there. 128 of those 190 were literally homeless. And we helped get them services. We connected them with services, got them a hot meal, got them clothing, personal care items, flu shots, eye exams, the gamut.
And you have some housing of your own that you own and manage.
Yes, we have 22 units of low-income housing, and they're pretty much full all the time. We have one vacancy right now. Someone just moved out in a good way, mm-hmm. and that's always the great thing to do. They've moved out, so we'll turn it over and have a 3-bedroom apartment available here shortly.
So there's a waiting list pretty much consistently for your housing?
Quite frankly, right now, there's no one on our waiting list for the 3-bedroom. So the 2-bedroom, we have about a 3-year waiting list, people. Wow. You know, and that could clear out in a month. If someone opens up and we start going through the list, we may get right through the list quickly. But there's different programs that we run for housing. We have a grant for leases that we help people for transitional housing where they will be under case management. We help them get started. We pay the majority of the rent at first, then they gradually work up, then they graduate from the program, and by that time they're on their own, either get some education, got a job, got employment. We work with them through there. So we have transitional type leases, and we have permanent leases. And then program that we don't operate but is available in the county is we have Section 8 vouchers, things like that, through NOAA, Northwest Oregon Housing Authority.
You're working not only with the housing that you own, but you're working with landlords all over the area.
Yes.
In terms of supplying assistance.
And we do rental assistance program where, unfortunately, we probably only help about 20% of the people that come in. We talked about this earlier, too. And the reason for that is that we only have so much funding.
Right.
And we thank agencies like the United Way is a huge supporter of Clatsop Community Action. We're a United Way agency. Safeco, Columbia Pacific CCO gave us a grant. Providence Health gave us a grant. They give us grants to help do this for people. So we help with their rent. The reason I said we only serve 20% of them is because you have to have, because we have so few dollars, you have to be sustainable. If you say to me, hey, I can't pay my rent this month, this is why we try to help you out. And if you're saying, if it's looking like when we run through a budget with you, you're going to be in the same situation next month, we're going to say, you know, you're not sustainable. We can't help you. We have no problem spending the money we do to help those people out that we do.
Well, I want to come back to that and talk about needs and gaps and sort of the cracks in the assistance. But let me talk with Diane for a bit first. Diane, tell us about the Fair Housing Council of Oregon and what your mission is.
We deal with civil rights in housing. So just like there's civil rights laws in employment and public accommodations, landlords, realtors, lenders, homeowners insurance companies, it's illegal for them to discriminate as well. So if someone is, say, applying for rental housing, or perhaps they're living in a complex and they believe they're being treated differently because of their race or the country they're from or their religion or because they have a disability or because they have kids or their sexual orientation, their source of income, any of these things, that's against the law. So we have a hotline to assist folks. One of the things we're going to look for is if the problem they're having is a fair housing or civil rights issue or a landlord-tenant issue. If it is, we're probably going to send them to legal aid. But for example, let's say somebody calls and says, everybody's freezing in our building. The landlord doesn't fix the heaters. Well, that's a requirement of all landlords. And so we'd probably send them to legal aid. That's a landlord-tenant law issue. But what if they say the Latino tenants aren't getting their heaters fixed?
Right.
Or I have a disability and I've had to ask the landlord for help a number of times and I think he's retaliating against me because he refuses to fix my heater. So, but we deal with, usually when people think of fair housing, they think of an applicant. You know, we don't want your kind or we're not going to take people like you or whatever. But a lot of issues happen while people are living in housing. Or the question if they're being evicted, what's the real reason? Or it may involve harassment. Because of the term we use is protected class, because of their race, religion, gender, and so on. So we basically deal with civil rights issues, and sometimes we can resolve these by talking with the landlords and sending them a letter and explaining the law. Unfortunately, there's no legal requirement right now for landlords to be tested or learn anything when they buy the rental properties, so a lot of times they just don't know. We do a lot of trainings for them as well as advocacy groups, and we, when appropriate, will help someone file a complaint, a civil rights complaint.
So a landlord can come to you to find out more about what the law requires of him or her.
Yes, in fact, so we have a hotline where they can ask questions. We also have a number of materials, for example, and you may be interested in having some of these if you don't, George, but we have these booklets for new landlords that are very basic and simple that go through fair housing, and we can get those out through, you know, rental owners groups, whoever, there's no charge. We also have a lot of information, you know, on our website, and we do trainings. A lot of times we'll do trainings for property management companies, housing authorities, rental owner groups, but individuals, if they have a question, can call our hotline. And I'll just give you one example of someone I just talked to this morning. One of the big misconceptions, things people don't understand, has to do with the disability protection. It's illegal to discriminate based on disabilities. And part of that means that somebody may need a reasonable accommodation, may need a landlord to do something a little bit differently for this person because of their disability, like maybe they get a parking spot close to their unit instead of having to park wherever because they have a walker or whatever. And a real common one is the issue around if someone is prescribed an animal for a disability. And there are many disabilities where they may be prescribed an animal. Now, the landlord may have a no pet policy, mm-hmm. but in this case, it's like a wheelchair and they would need to make an exception. So, you know, and that's something that, you know, somebody may call us if they're confused and say, can I charge a deposit? And we would say no. But we're not going to give legal advice, but we're a good first stop just to learn about the law and fair housing rights and responsibilities.
And in looking over your website and other sources, I was kind of surprised that it can be kind of confusing. For example, as I recall, it wouldn't be legal for it wouldn't be legal for a landlord to refuse to rent to somebody because they were getting a government check. But it is still legal for them to refuse to somebody who's on Section 8 housing.
Right. How does all that work? So there's a state-protected class for source of income. And that was set up to make sure that people whose incomes come from a public assistance program like TANF or SSD, SSI, different social security programs, unemployment insurance, wouldn't be turned down, assuming that they have enough money to meet the amount of income required. In this part of the state, it does not include occupation. So if a landlord says, I don't want to rent to you because you're an attorney, or because you're an exotic dancer, those are two we've heard about.
That's two interesting.
Yes, those are the clients we've had. We've thought of having a potluck, but inviting them. But that doesn't apply here. So occupation is not in there. So initially, when the legislature created this as a protected class, they made an exception for Section 8, housing choice vouchers. And if any listeners don't know, those would come through NOAA here. And for someone who's low income, it means that they pay a third of their income, which is for rent, which is considered the standard, and the housing authority pays the difference. So there was a loophole made because a lot of the housing industry folks said, we don't want to have to rent to Section 8 folks, which involves some assumptions, which we can talk about. You know, they can do the same screening they do for anybody else, rental history, credit history, criminal history. But anyway, so that's been a loophole and that's been a problem. So the legislature in the last session closed that loophole. Mm-hmm. So starting in July, if you see an ad in the paper or on Craigslist that says no Section 8, that's illegal. A landlord cannot refuse solely on this basis. And the thing about fair housing law is it does expand over time. In the very beginning, when the Fair Housing Act was passed in 1968, it protected us from discrimination based on race, religion, national origin, and color. Since then, there have been more protected classes. For example, now sexual orientation in Oregon is a protected class, and now Section 8. There are other things that aren't protected here, but maybe someday, like political belief. So it tends to expand over time, and I think our next big change then will be in July. And if landlords want to get more information about that, what that means, they can contact us, and I'm sure they can contact NOAA as well.
Mm-hmm. And if I could address one point, is sure. That you mentioned you're not legal aid. Our agency does host the Oregon Law Center. Normally, once every other month or so, we advertise it. You could call our office, and we can tell you when the next one is. Well, I could tell you right now, it's not even published yet. The next one in our office is going to be the 21st of March. But if you call up and make an appointment, you could have one-on-one time with an attorney for any of these type questions. It's better to call ahead of time because then you're guaranteed time with them versus just walk in. But we host these all the time.
And can you give the number or tell people how they would look you up to get
just,
that number?
Our number is 503-325-1400. And our website's www.ccaservices.org.
So CCA for Class of Community Action Services.org.
Can I throw ours in as well?
You bet.
So if you want to call the Fair Housing Council because you have a question, whether you're a tenant, a landlord, a realtor, or someone buying a home or whatever, we have a toll-free number because we're in Portland, and it's 800-424-3247, 424-3247, and our website is www.fhco.org, and that's FHCO is in Fair Housing Council of Oregon.
Now, George, you mentioned, I think, that you can only serve about 20% of
that's
the people
correct.
Who actually come to you needing
that,
help.
For housing. For rental assistance, I'll say. Yes.
So what's the need there in order to close? That's got to be a little frustrating to
You mean how do you close the gap? It's very simple. Jobs. I mean, our economy, and if you look at our statistics on the state, we have one of the lowest unemployments in the state. So it's very difficult to try to get federal or state money into our county when they say, wait a minute, you don't have a problem with unemployment. Well, the world, according to George, is this. We had people on unemployment a long time ago. It started hitting us before anybody else, and those people are no longer on unemployment. Mm-hmm. Their benefits have ended. Mm-hmm. So guess what?
Right.
They're not a number. And it's been like that forever. However, when's the last time we had 7 years of a bad economy?
Right.
So that's what's going on here. So, you know, jobs can create a lot of a lot of solutions to the problems, because there are a lot of people out there that want jobs.
So what you're saying by jobs, jobs, jobs is that in order for you to be able to help people, they have to have a source of income.
Yes.
And if they don't have that source of income, there's nothing that you can
do. Yeah, and I don't want to have people not call us for help, because, you know, that source of income could be something like Social Security, disability, whatever. We just have to show that they can sustain themselves in the apartment or that they're in, that they're asking for assistance. And we have other assistance, like I said, energy assistance. For example, last year in this county alone, we helped 1,400 families with over $400,000 of energy assistance.
What about the other side of things? What about your budget? Where does your funding come from, and how can you get some more?
Well, we are a private nonprofit. We are not a county state agency, contrary to what people think. They hear that our food bank's the only regional food bank in the county. They call it the county food bank. Well, it's not. We are a nonprofit, and we count on donations. We count on me writing grants, like I said. Several organizations that help us out tremendously. United Way is one of the biggest ones, Safeco. Providence Health gave us a big one, and the Columbia Pacific. I mean, there's a lot of funding coming through those agencies to us to help us out. Other grants, I write federal grants. I write state grants to help out with housing. So that's our – and we do fundraising events.
So that's actually true with both of you. You are nonprofits. You are not government agencies. And I would say, George, you're right. I bet most people think you are an agency of Clatsop County government.
Yes. And the other thing that's unique about us, we were talking about earlier, is I'm in a real unique situation because we are a landlord. You mentioned, you know, hey, we have 22 units called Hilltop Apartments. So I'm a landlord, so I have to follow those landlord rules. At the same time, I'm advocating for people whose landlords are not being nice to them. So I'd like to say we're a great landlord because we know what we're supposed to do.
So, well, let me hand you the magic wand for just a moment. If there was the magic wand in your hand and you could change one thing that would help you to serve the people you want to serve, what would that be? Are we back to the jobs, or?
Yeah, because I and my agency, my board of directors, we don't believe in giving a hand out. Mm-hmm. We believe in giving a hand up.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to help people. We want to help people become productive. And most people that we see in our office feel the same way. They're not feeling good about being there asking for a handout. They want a hand up. So if most of the people that we see that we could help, if they could have a job, they'd say, thank you very much. It's very rewarding when we see that. We actually have people that we've helped that come back and are now donors to our agency.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Well, let me pause for a moment to remind everyone that we are talking with George Sable, who is the executive director of Clatsop Community Action, which is a nonprofit and not an arm of Clatsop Community Government. And we're talking with Diane Hess, who is with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. And Diane, when basically the way things work with you normally is that someone who is feeling they have been discriminated against will come to you with a complaint. And what happens
then? Well, there's actually two tracks, and I'll talk about that one first, and is an individual. An individual will contact us, and first of all, we'll try to determine if it is, in fact, a civil rights issue, a fair housing issue. And any number of things can happen. Again, sometimes we can just work directly with the landlord and solve the problem. Sometimes we may, in some cases, send out testers, kind of like secret shoppers, to see what's really going on. Because as you can imagine, with these discrimination complaints, it's often one person's word against another. So if it, if the unit's available, we might have two people. They're not coming to trap the landlord in any way. But let's say there's, I'm just making this up, a white couple and a mixed-race couple. Maybe the white couple is told there's three units available and the mixed-race couple is told, sorry, they've already been rented, or they're told different amounts of rent, different deposits. Mm-hmm. Well, that's really strong. Although I will say, again, a lot of the people who call us already live in housing, and so when it moves into an investigation, say we work with BOLI, the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. That might involve interviewing witnesses, looking at written documents. Why was this person turned away? Why was this reasonable accommodation request turned down? So that we deal with individuals. The other part of fair housing we deal with, and we're dealing with it more and more, is what we call systemic discrimination. Basically, every city, every county has a legal obligation to affirmatively further fair housing, to make sure their zoning policies, how they enforce occupancy, all of these are not discriminating and are moving us toward more integration. And HUD is really paying attention to this now, and there are getting to be, I mean, major cases. Like there was one for $65 million against Westchester County, New York, because they were not doing this. And some examples of things that I've seen here in Oregon, although not in the counties that we're talking about here, is where, let's say, a housing authority wants to put in, or a nonprofit housing developer, low-income housing, and the neighbors are up in arms. We don't want those kinds of people here. You know, they're all, they come up with a lot of stereotypes, kind of like Section 8. And there's no reason not to permit the development based on the regular planning and land use regulations. But then if the city council says, oh, okay, we don't want to hassle here, and they deny the development, that's also a fair housing issue. So there's the individuals who are hurt, and then it can also occur on a global level, because there were two parts to the Fair Housing Act. One was to prevent individual acts of discrimination, and the other was, we have a segregated society. We need to all affirmatively work to move that ahead. Now, that part of the law was kind of buried in, you know, a wink and a smile until just a few years ago, and now it's definitely moving forward, because now cities and counties realize they have to show what they're doing, and it's not just putting up a fair housing poster. You know, they really need to show what are they doing to help move things forward. So the $65 million case, they kept building low-income housing in the same part of the county all the time. They didn't move it around. And as often happens, when you look at who lives in that housing, there are a lot of protected class individuals. Even if you don't get into race or national origin, there's a lot of families with children, or there's a lot of people with disabilities. So it has an impact on a protected class. So that's the second piece that we work on.
It seems to me, in the examples you gave, that if there's a complaint about perhaps somebody discriminating against renting you a property or selling you a property based on your race and so on, that would seem, with sort of what we're calling the secret shopper now, an easier thing to test. The other example you gave, though, about whether the heat is being turned up equally in apartments of different people would be a harder...
Yes, it doesn't always work. It's only in certain cases. And, you know, if somebody says I'm being treated differently from my neighbors, I mean, we all live in the complex.
Right.
But, you know, are the rules being enforced equally? You know, I mean, are there consequences that are the same if you violate the rental agreement? I actually just heard about a property manager a couple of weeks ago in a complex. And like many apartment complexes, they have a rule, you know, there's after 10 o'clock, you can't make a lot of noise, and that's perfectly fine, but it should be consistently applied. This manager did not like this one household that played ranchera music. He doesn't like this Mexican music, and then he would go on and make comments about Mexicans. There were other people that played country western music, and that was fine by him. So that seems like, you know, not a horrendous example, but it gives you an idea of the important... There's really... three important messages if anyone who's listening is a landlord. One is consistency, consistency, consistency. All the applicants get run through the same criteria. You should rent to the first person who meets that criteria. If you have in-place tenants, you treat them all consistently. The other one is to watch your assumptions. We had a landlord in Portland, this was a $34,000 settlement, who wouldn't rent to families with teenagers, which is, it's against the law to discriminate against families with kids of any age. Well, it turned out they had the teenagers from you know where in a family, but they're now saying no teenagers based on that. So that's another rule. And then the third one is people have the right to choose where they want to live, assuming they're eligible. We've seen landlords who mean well, who say, well, there's no other Russians in this building, but I know another place, or this isn't a good place for kids. And that's really up to the other folks to decide, not the landlord. And that's called steering, and that's illegal.
Mm-hmm. Well, going back to your first example of the discrimination on the basis of race, let's suppose mm-hmm. that you send in your quote-unquote secret shoppers and you mm-hmm. verify that this landlord is indeed discriminating on the basis of race or one of the other protected mm-hmm. classes. What happens then?
What happens then? Well, we probably would test it twice, too, to make sure, because maybe sometimes – well, because sometimes – it's not as blatant as what I said.
Right.
Sometimes maybe the white couple is given, taken the tour and told about specials and given all these materials, and the black couple is just told, yeah, here's the key. You can take a look at it. If there's testing evidence, that goes with the complaint to BOLI. If it's an administrative complaint, we also have a pool of civil rights attorneys we work with. That's very strong evidence. And then that moves over into a fair housing case against that landlord. And you know, either the landlord will say, oh my goodness, and try to conciliate and work out, you know, a settlement, or it could go to court, either an administrative law judge through the state or to federal court. So so here's one that went to court not that long ago, was $65,000. So in this was a apartment complex that they had a rule. Okay, there's all these apartments with balconies. And you could put stuff out on your balcony. You could have a barbecue, you could have whatever, but no toys. If you have toys on the balcony, you have to pay a fine. So there's no word that says children, but statistically speaking, the vast majority of folks who use toys are children.
I think that's a safe bet. Yes.
Yeah. Well, just like a complex that says no tricycles anywhere in the complex. Occasionally you do see adults on tricycles, but clearly that has a large impact on families with children.
Tell me again how someone gets in contact with you if they need your help.
Well, for here, you'd call our toll-free number, and that's 800-424-3247, and we have trained staff on our hotline. They're bilingual in English and Spanish, and if anyone needs a different language, we can broker those in through the language line, which we work with. But I'll tell you right now, one in every 10 acts of illegal discrimination is actually reported. Mm-hmm. So we would encourage listeners, if you listen to this and you think, well, I wonder if this was discrimination and you're not sure, it's fine to call us. We want to hear from you because so many things are not dealt with. Or maybe you've already moved out. You know, that manager was harassing me. Maybe it's sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. That's also illegal. Or maybe the neighbors were harassing me because of my religion or sexual orientation or whatever, and the landlord didn't do anything, but I don't live there anymore. Obviously, we encourage people to file a complaint as soon as possible, but you actually have up to 2 years. So even if you're listening and something is old news, you can still contact us.
Can I add something to that?
Please do.
From my experience, from our experience with some people, is that I would caution the listeners that are saying, oh, I'm going to do that. We've had some, I felt, legitimate complaints, but when you don't pay your rent, et cetera, when you're a problem for the landlord,
right.
The landlord is, you know, it's very difficult to prove the legitimate problem that's there. Does that make sense?
That is exactly
right. It happens a lot of times. I feel for these people. I know that they're being discriminated against, but then I say, well, you didn't pay your rent for 3 months straight.
Right.
You did intentional damage to the unit. It's going to be hard to get a judge to back you and say, oh, yeah, I really think that the landlord was wrong doing this. Well,
the issues get all mushed together.
They get all mushed together. And
George, let me have your contact info again, too, please, if somebody wants to contact you.
We're a local agency. We're in Astoria, and it's 503-325-1400.
Thank you both. We've been talking to George Sable, Executive Director of Clatsop Community Action, and with Diane Hess, who's with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. Thank you very much. You've been listening to The Human Beat on KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5 FM, and streaming live on the web at coastradio.org.